to Women in Venture Capital. I'm Rushvina, Chief of Staff at General Catalyst, with prior experience in finance and early stage VC.
And I'm Anvita, Senior Product Manager at UiPath with experiences across tech startups and venture capital. Our mission at Women in Venture Capital is simple: increase the representation of women in the VC industry through awareness and engagement.
So join us as we engage with women establishing their presence in the industry. Our guest today is Lily Lyman. Lily is a partner at Underscore VC, a Boston-based venture capital firm investing in seed to Series A startups with a focus on digital transformation, commerce, intertech, future of work, and AI ML. Before joining Underscore, Lily brought her extensive Silicon Valley experience to the East Coast, having led product strategy initiatives at Facebook, where she contributed significantly to the international growth of Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp, and Messenger. Her early career also includes co-founding and consumer ag tech startup, showcasing her entrepreneurial spirit. Lily holds an undergrad degree from Harvard University and an MBA from Stanford. Thank you so much for joining us, Lily. It's a pleasure to have you today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to be here.
And I started with your impressive background. You've worked in product strategy at Facebook, co-founded a consumer ag tech startup while at Stanford. Really curious as to what motivated your transition from being deeply involved in product and product strategy to focusing on venture capital, and how has your past experience really influenced your approach to VC?
Yes, well, it's a great question. The most transformative thing that changed my path was actually my first job out of college, which was with an organization called Endeavor, which is an amazing organization that works with entrepreneurs all over the world. And it was my first introduction to what is the world of entrepreneurship? What does it mean to build a company? And my takeaway from that experience, after spending about 3 years with that organization, first in Latin America and then in their headquarters in New York, was I either want to go be one of those founders who's changing the world by disrupting technology and building a big company and employing great people, or I want to go be one of those people who can help those entrepreneurs and sort of enable and empower them. And I learned about the role of venture capital in doing that, both in terms of capital, but also in terms of sort of advice and coaching and access to networks. So that really changed my career. And coming out of that, I did a stint in consulting because I thought that was an effective way to go learn about business, quote unquote business. And I did learn a lot, but I felt far away from the entrepreneurial world. Ended up going to business school at my dream school, Stanford, which felt right in the heart of everything entrepreneurial. And coming out of Stanford, I think I was interested in venture. I'd spent a lot of time sort of studying it, learning about it. But I thought that in order to be good at it long term, I should go get some operating chops and actually build product and ship product and understand what does it mean to bring it into the world and get users to use it and love it. But in the background, I had spent some time angel investing while I was at Facebook, and I got involved with Harvard's angel alumni group called Yard Ventures, and they asked me to join their very first investment committee. And it was just a great experience of meeting founders, looking at pitch decks, taking pitches and things like that. And I sort of fell in love with it. And so as I was looking to move back east, I actually wasn't necessarily looking to leave Facebook, but I got introduced to the Underscore team through a friend of mine. And I fell in love with the core community model that we have here, the team, the values and the approach to venture. And so it was a little bit serendipitous. It had been on the back of my mind, but it was sort of right team, right place, right opportunity. And that's what encouraged me to make the jump. So that's how I ended up here.
That's awesome. And continuing the chain of thought there, at Underscore, you've led investments in several key areas, including digital transformation, commerce, insurtech, future of work, AI, ML, among others. Could you share more about your investment philosophy and how you identify potential investment opportunities in these sectors?
Happy to talk about this. So we are B2B software investors, broadly speaking, if you will. And then within that, each of us as investors has specific areas where they spend a lot of time. So I spend a lot of time in insurtech and a couple other vertical SaaS areas. And then I also spend a fair amount of time looking at workflow automation and how it changes. My partner, Chris, is deep in the fintech space, building on his experience at Paydiant, which then got acquired by PayPal. And he was there for many years. And then Rich DeLude, my other partner, spends a lot of time sort of close to the bottom of the stack looking at emerging technology. So we're specialists within sort of this B2B software generalist umbrella. What we spend our time focusing on is within that, really thinking about how do we get companies to product market fit. So we're usually the earliest stage investors. We're usually the first institutional capital in. And we feel like it's our job to help companies figure out, do we have product market fit? Are we really solving the right pain point in a meaningful way? Is our solution differentiated? And are we building the right team to help go after this opportunity and setting ourselves up to then go raise that next round of capital? So in some ways, we are generalists in the B2B software space. And then in some ways, we're specialists within specific sort of domains within that. And then also, I feel like we're stage specialists in getting to product market fit. In terms of, you know, your question in terms of how do we find opportunities in this space? I mean, it's a variety of different things, but we're very driven by team and uniquely qualified teams. And those can come from a lot of different places. Over half of our investments are introduced to us through members of our core community, which is this group of advisors that we actually share some of our carry with to build alignment, to have them help us build companies and source companies. Over a third of our portfolio comes out of the great academic ecosystem here in Boston. So places like Harvard and MIT and Northeastern and others. And then we also, you know, we're really bullish about folks who are spinning out of companies like Toast and Klaviyo and HubSpot and some of the other homegrown success cases here in Boston. We're seeing a lot of very qualified folks spin out and start their own companies. So we have domain specialty, we have stage specialty, but it's really all about teams and people. And what we look for are exceptional entrepreneurs who have a right to win in a specific place. They have a unique point of view and they're going after a really big opportunity. And we can talk more about any of those criteria.
This actually flows really well into my next question, which is about Boston. So since you moved back to Boston, you've been part of Underscore's commitment to doubling down on the Boston area, supporting the next generation of iconic Boston companies. So the question is, what makes Boston's startup ecosystem so unique and how does Underscore contribute to this growth? And actually, fun fact, I was reading, I think 2 weeks ago, some data from Carta that had Boston as the second most thriving ecosystem, at least in 2023. So I'm really curious to how you view it.
Absolutely. Boston is it's a really exciting ecosystem. I think sometimes it's maybe underestimated, but if you look at the data, it's always top two or three. A friend of mine says it's always in the playoffs, if you will, from like a seed and series A fundraise perspective. So there's a lot of interesting things going on. And I think the other thing that people underestimate is sort of the variety of industries that are interesting here. Obviously, it's known for its biotech and its healthcare, and those are really interesting spaces. They're spaces where we invest, particularly right now with everything going on with AI and machine learning applied to things like pharma. And we have some great companies like Tetra Science, which is leading the way as sort of the snowflake, but for scientific data. So there's, you know, those industries are well known, but there's a lot going on in the B2B SaaS space in general. There's interesting things going on in supply chain logistics. There's interesting things in insurtech and fintech. And so there's sort of AI machine learning applied across the board. You know, there's a lot of great talent and research coming out of places like MIT and Harvard and others. So I think the things to know about Boston, and again, when I was moving back to the West Coast, I was sort of skeptical. I was like, what's going on here? But it's actually much more robust and diverse than I had originally given it credit for. And I think it's a combination of this constant flow of talent, folks like you guys. You know, there's 250,000 students that come through Boston every year to go to school. And so, you know, there's one famous quote that Boston has sort of unparalleled consistent flow of exceptional talent. And it is consistent. Even during the pandemic, people physically came here. So it gives geography sort of its a new sense of importance given folks that are coming here. There are more STEM degrees given out in the Boston area than anywhere else in the world. There's more research being done in sort of a 9-mile radius than almost anywhere else in the world. So there's some pretty exceptional raw ingredients with the talent and the tech that come through this environment. I think if you couple that with some of the homegrown success cases like the Klaviyo, the HubSpot, Toast, Salsify, Acquia, like there's some really interesting companies being built here that are consistently spinning off talent. Then if you look at some of the big West Coast tech companies, they have some important teams here across Amazon and Microsoft, Google, Facebook. Anyway, so this combination makes it a really interesting environment for early stage investing. And that's, you know, I think the numbers reflect that in the Carta data. And that's part of the reason why we're very bullish on Boston. We are not limited to Boston. You know, we will invest elsewhere, but about, you know, over 60% of our capital's here. You know, the rest is elsewhere. We have companies in New York and Texas, California, Chicago, internationally. So we're not constrained to it, but I think there's so much to be excited about here. And I think it gets underestimated.
That is really interesting. And thanks for sharing that. Doubling down a little bit more on your investment thesis and philosophies, your interest in startups using data to redefine the customer experience has led to early investments in companies like Popcart, Hi Marley. Curious if you can talk about the importance of data in enhancing customer experience and how you evaluate startups in this space.
It's such an important trend that's not necessarily new, although I think it's been taken to sort of a new level in the last 2 years. But I mean, if you think about digital experiences, what they are doing is fundamentally creating a new set of data that we didn't have before. When you have digital experiences, it's digitizing all this data that we didn't have previously, and then you can use all that data to drive personalization of experience. And we as consumers have gotten used to that in our shopping experiences or whatever it might be. We want curated things that are tailored to us because you know things about us, and overall, it's a more enriching and productive experience. What we're seeing is that customer experience mindset that's already happened on the consumer side, and we're seeing it being applied to B2B software, which is the way I interact with software that I'm using for work or whatever the industry might be. People want it to be more curated, personalized, and focused on their unique data. The part that's really interesting about that now, and it's a company like Hi Marley has laid very effective groundwork to capture this, is that proprietary vertical data sets that are specific to that industry and then ultimately specific to those consumers and customers within that industry. So, Hi Marley arguably has some of the best conversational data in P&C insurance right now because of all the conversations that flow through its platform. We have several companies that have that type of vertical data that puts them in a position to have proprietary data sets, small language models, whatever it might be, that creates a whole world of opportunity as we think about how do you unleash machine learning and AI to those types of proprietary data sets. So that's where we've been spending a lot of our time these days, is around maybe those overlooked verticals or those that are still earlier in their digitization, if you will. And once you can then digitize those workflows, things like manufacturing or other parts of supply chain, or agriculture, whatever it might be. There's a lot of pieces that are still sort of early in their digitization. And once you're doing that, what you're actually creating is very verticalized proprietary data sets. And that's what we get very excited about. So I think that's where we've been spending a lot of our time from an investment perspective.
That makes a lot of sense. And what you said is true. I think data has always been around, but I think with all the generative AI and, increased interest in data centers everywhere, there's also been this component. And I see it, and I've seen it in pitch meetings, is there's always this question. It's like, if you are in a new way interacting with data with your consumers, or even B2B side, there's always this question. It's like, can we monetize this data? Is this data helpful somewhere, down the line? So it's really interesting that that's happening as well. Lily, this has been such a great conversation. Our last question is very different. And I just wanted to get your take on, given your unique position and influence in the startup ecosystem, how do you leverage your role at Underscore to promote diversity and inclusion within the startups you invest in and the broader venture capital community? And what advice do you have for aspiring women investors? As you know, the stats are not that great, and we go by data also here on this podcast. So I'm really curious to hear your take on it.
It's an area I'm very passionate about, so I'm glad you asked. I've been involved with All Raise here in Boston for many years. I've been involved in a couple other women's organizations, and I'm a big believer in sort of bringing women together to try to change these numbers. My overall philosophy in this is that first and foremost, I have to be excellent at my job and at my role, which is to be a great VC and deliver outsized returns to my limited partners. And if I can do that really effectively and help build an excellent venture firm, that's probably the most powerful way that I can have an impact on numbers and diversity in this market. And so I guess that would be my advice, which is, first and foremost, be excellent in what you're doing, whether you're an investor or you're building a company. Dream big and go be the change you want to see in the world. I think that's the way to then earn the platform to then be able to help others and have a larger difference. But if you can't sort of be the change you want to see, I think it's obviously sort of harder. I think along that way in pursuing those big dreams, bring other women along with you. I think that's a really important thing. People have done that for me. There've been several people when I moved to Boston in the women's circuit here that were incredibly helpful to me and included me and introduced me and helped set me up for success. And so I always want to pay that forward to other women. I think cheerleading other women, helping getting other women in the room once you sort of have that position of influence to do so. So I think it's, you know, go be really excellent at what you're doing so that you can be that role model and be that example of what success can look like. And then along the way, be a cheerleader and champion for other women in doing so. I think we need to stick together and lift each other up. And so those are some of the things I feel really passionately about and hope to see some of those numbers start to shift.
Yeah, and I couldn't agree more. It's very interesting when you're in rooms where decisions are being made and you see the subtle and sometimes not as subtle ways that women lift other women with themselves, you know, just throw the names out when it comes to important decisions being made. It does make a difference. So totally echo whatever you said. Lily, thank you so much for joining us on this episode today. I'm sure our listeners will really appreciate your insights.
Well, thank you so much for having me, and thank you for doing what you're doing. Keep doing it. And if there's other ways we can support you, let me know.